Drexel's Learning Innovation Program launches at this hour with a speaker series this evening featuring John Maeda, the global head of computational design and inclusion at web developer Automattic. I had opportunity to speak with John earlier in the day. John, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks tonight.
Thanks, Dave.
First off, tell us about this company, Automattic.
Automattic was founded by a man named Matt Mullenweg, who is the co-founder of what's called the WordPress project, ability to get more people online, publishing what they want to say when they want to say it. The neat thing about WordPress is since its beginning, it's completely free and it's completely open. And if you want to change it, you can change it to your heart's content. This is open source at its best.
And what ultimately could be realized through such an endeavor?
Well, I remember the reason why I set up a WordPress site was in 2004 because I was in a Wired magazine interview and I was misquoted all over the place. And I was like, wait, I didn't say that. So I set up a WordPress blog at the time to say what I want to say.
They weren't alternate facts. They were the real ones.
They were what I was saying, the way I was saying it.
Let's talk a bit about your background. MIT.
Yep.
Technology. And
yeah.
Then Rhode Island School of Design,
yeah.
Art. And you've been at the vanguard of converting STEM to STEAM. I'll let you lay out what those acronyms are and the endeavor to do so.
Yeah. Short story. I went to MIT, my parents' dream. I wasn't happy with just computer science. I wanted more. So I went to art school after that. I came back to MIT as a professor at the place called the Media Lab. I was tenured, and the problem with tenure is tenured professorships are awesome because you've made it. You know, it's like 7 years of hard work, and then you can never be fired again. And this bothered me, so I left, and I became president of a college.
Was it because you personally felt you had less incentive to advance because of the tenure status?
It's because I felt I wouldn't grow. Because there was no constraint. There was no need to grow. And by being president of a college, boy, did I had to grow. It was the same year as a global financial crisis, 2008. I did that for roughly 6 years. I worked in venture capital in Silicon Valley. And my mission is to connect engineering with the arts and business.
Where is that currently being done?
The best work that has been done in the last 10 years in STEAM, art and STEM education, with a great sense of business, was Apple. I say was Apple because Apple's having a little hard time right now. But Apple was an interesting company that took great design, great technology, and a fantastically improved business model under Steve Jobs the second time, and showed the world that good technology isn't enough, a great business model isn't enough without good design, and technology can serve humankind in a whole new way that no one thought a computer could ever serve.
But how unique was it ultimately to Jobs and Apple, or could that model really be applied to other companies and endeavors?
I think that model needs to be reapplied in industry today. It requires leaders who can step forward. A lot of my work is helping creative people be less afraid of money. If you're a creative person, you're told to starve. Starve for your work. Only if you starve for your work are you like honoring your work.
The romance of the starving artist.
Oh, people love that. I am totally against that. The reason why is because for most of my life as a creative person, I was always told, don't worry about the money, John. And it was about the third person who told me, don't worry about the money, that I began to wonder, should I be worried about the money? I got my MBA as a result, and I got over my fear of money. And in doing so, realized that understanding how capital intersects with creativity and technology unlocks so much possibility.
A big fear of those who might even entertain notions of advancing themselves in STEAM is the fear of technology, and you helped to dispel that with a book called The Laws of Simplicity.
Well, you know, it came out at the right time. It came out at a time when people were feeling technology was getting a lot more complex.
And you they're not feeling that anymore?
Well, that was 2005, so which was a certain level of complexity. It was pre-mobile phone, too. But I laid out how to make things simpler. My CEO, Matt Mullenweg, recently asked me, gee, John, it seems like you're having problems making WordPress less complex. Didn't you write a book about that? Nudge, nudge. He's good at that. And I told him, well, I wrote that pre-mobile. Mobile has changed everything.
How so?
Because 10 years ago, computers were the tools of nerds. We wouldn't talk about, oh, what computer do you have, Dave? Oh, I got this computer. It's kind of embarrassing. But now the computer is a phone. What kind of phone do you have, Dave? We somehow forgot that having a computer was nerdly because the phone is what all of us have. And the phone is a computer in our pocket or purse today.
So it's gone from nerdly to worldly.
Absolutely. And because of that, that same complexity that we used to carry around, actually have on our desktop, we now carry around. So when we're confused as to why this is so hard to use, it's because this is a whole new era.
It's the marketing, much like once upon a time, hey, what kind of car do you drive? Well, now what kind of device do you have? Well, the better devices have all the bells and whistles, and who can understand how to use them all?
Exactly. And that's why it's a good time for design, because technologists love to add features because it's exciting to build a feature. Designers should be removing features from things, which people might not like if you're the maker of features. Why do designers have to remove features? To curate what you should experience.
Draw out that term, curate for experience.
Well, it's kind of like I can imagine you as a curator of voice and ideas. You can pull every fact out of someone, but you're picking and choosing which one might resonate with your audience the best. You understand the audience. If you understand the audience, you can curate for them. Designers think about the audience and build that mapping to them, not to the thing at hand.
In advance of meeting you, I observed you on one of your many TED Talks, and perhaps an analogous phrase that you brought up comes to mind. You're interested in making eye meat rather than eye candy.
Yeah, that was an era where I was making graphics that flew around, and people really liked it. But I hated people calling it eye candy because that seems so pejorative. So I rebranded it as eye meat, you know, with more fiber, more meaning. But it woke me up from this problem I had as a technologist in that I wanted to make things that went wow. Because wow is what people like respond to. But over time, I took upon what my friend at Muji, the brand Muji, calls making the after wow. You know what the after wow is? The after wow, I'm sure it happens to your listeners, is I don't really know what happened, and I'm going to like think about this for a week, and oh, wow, that's what it was about.
The aha.
Exactly. And the after wow looks much different than the wow.
So then how do we square this acquisitive society, things, with what you refer to as post-possessionista?
Well, the great thing about computer experiences, well, the post-positionista phrase that I developed or probably appropriated somewhere was I'd moved to Silicon Valley and I was always in an Uber or Airbnb. This is like 4 years ago, so it was kind of an anomaly. Someone my age probably shouldn't have been doing that, but I wanted to live like a millennial. And in doing so, I felt so free. And in that freedom, I realized that the smartphone contains all this experience. And so a post-positionista person can live like that because a smartphone is this meta device that can do almost anything.
Freedom, save the fact that, certainly based on our Radio Times program yesterday, you are always being observed and watched by at least retailers and who knows whom else.
Oh, well, that question of who's watching you, I missed that segment, so I'll have to listen to it. It's the challenge of educating people to understand how the technology works. Because you look at a smartphone, you crack it open, there's nothing inside there. So it must be harmless. But it turns out that over the last few decades, what's inside your smartphone is more complex than maybe like a million 747s, especially when it's connected to the all the other 747 computers in the world.
And certainly more advanced than the technology that put man on the moon now almost half a century ago.
Far beyond. Just to give you context, the computers from 30 years ago compared to now, the computers now are billions times more capable than computers in the past. So imagine a car 30 years ago that went 60 miles per hour. A car today would be going at light speed, which doesn't make any sense. But that's what's been happening because of the microprocessor revolution.
The power of your message is we're not merely trying to hang on for the ride. We can drive that vehicle.
We can make change if we understand the vehicle. And because access to understanding the vehicle has been locked up by different companies, so you can't look inside to see how it works. That's why I wanted to be at a company where the software is open. You can look inside. Oh, that's where the brake connects to the whatever. Oh, that's what's inside there. Number one. Number two, how do I change the brake? Maybe I can make it work my way. So there you go.
Drexel is inviting you to be the kickoff speaker to their learning innovation program. This is a huge question, but are we also envisioning a big change in the education model, the need to go to a brick-and-mortar campus to acquire the knowledge needed to pursue one's ends?
Well, first of all, I'm so excited that Excite, that's a funny sort of like double thing, whatever, that Excite wanted me to kick this off because the person who leads this, Professor Young-Moo Kim, was very open to my idea that we would have a workshop for people in the locale to learn about technology.
On balance, do you have cause for optimism that this avail and others learning, education, when we hear about the problems with our education system, are you optimistic that we will continue to advance in this direction and move forward?
Well, I was so delighted that I got to meet some people who are touring your studios here just now. And when the young man asked me, how did I get there? My first answer was education, but my second answer was teachers. Because we forget that teachers deliver the education. And as an example, I was telling the students how like my parents wanted us to go to a great college, but they didn't go to college. They weren't sure how to get to a good college. My chemistry teacher, Mr. Wakefield, knew that I wanted to go to MIT. And he said, I could never get there because I don't have the right extracurricular, this and that. He told me that I had to go to summer school at the local university to be even considered. I went to my parents and said this, told them this, and they told me, you can't like take off the summer. You're working at the store. And so I told this to Mr. Wakefield. And then 2 weeks later, I saw him at the store talking to my parents, telling them that, you know, your son wants to go to this school. You want your son to go to this school. You'll have to let him go to summer school. So those kind of moments have happened throughout my life where I saw it was the intervener, the educator.
The mentor.
Exactly. And we forget it when we talk about education so easily for some reason. I don't know why.
John Maeda, thanks so much for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Thank you, Dave.
John Maeda, Global Head of Computational Design and Inclusion at web developer Automattic.